Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Thanks for coming along tonight, folks, where the Honourable Gabrielle Upton makes a welcome return to the Sydney Institute. She's well known to many of you, so I'll introduce her briefly. She graduated, including with an MBA, worked in law and in finance, and of course, the member for Vaucluse in Sydney since 2011. Now, Ms. Upton was a minister for 5 years in the coalition government and is currently parliamentary secretary to the Premier. And tonight's topic is accelerating research and development in New South Wales. Gabrielle Upton, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you to Anne and Gerard. How wonderful you are, and what an intimate, beautiful setting in which to do a speech. We're packed to the rafters, which is even better. I'm probably concerned, both Anne and Gerard today, wondering whether they would seat you all, but we're at capacity, which is always a nice way to be. And a lot of you do know one another, so it's a friendly crowd, at least until we have the Q&A. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak tonight. So like many of you here, maybe all of you here, I was lucky to have the benefit of a university education. And I really didn't appreciate the power of knowledge that comes from that education and from research which underpins it until I could look beyond my own academic studies as a student. And then later, before I came into politics, 8 years ago, served as the Deputy Chancellor of UNSW. And then I saw knowledge in a university setting through a larger lens. And I saw it through the eyes of students, which I'd been one, of course, through academics, through the university relationships with industry and with government. And I had a higher sense of the value of knowledge. It really is a possession in our lives, and for many of us who are parents, we appreciate this as well, that isn't diminished. You educate your children, you know that it's an investment well made, it doesn't age, and in fact your wisdom and the experience you build from that makes that knowledge even more valuable. I'd like to call it the ultimate renewable resource. At graduation ceremonies, which I used to do, they were some of the best events I think I've ever done in my professional lifetime. I took the opportunity to speak to the students, and I wanted to encourage them to explore, to ask the questions, to experiment. I think that kind of approach that people learn at universities best serves our community in so many ways, because what we're trying to do is create better economic and social outcomes as a Western civilization. And I think that's an approach, that questioning approach, that knowledge acquisition approach, that can power research and development. I'm here tonight because I'm leading a passion project, and it's not often that as a person in government you get to do that. I feel I'm privileged, and I'm leading an initiative for the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, to accelerate research and development in New South Wales. My mission is to deliver an action plan by mid next year, and it's going to make New South Wales a research leader within the nation and a world-class contributor, which is what we deserve to be. Tonight, in speaking to you, I will make the case that investment in R&D matters because it powers innovation. It can future-proof New South Wales. The New South Wales government is a recognised global leader in hard infrastructure. You only need to have looked up on your walk here tonight to see that be the case. Our asset recycling strategy led to what is now an unprecedented $93 billion of investment into roads, to buses, to hospitals, to schools. And so now New South Wales wants to be a recognised global leader in soft infrastructure. And that's the infrastructure that helps develop and support ideas for new industries, for new products, for new services. And this is the way that we will drive further economic growth, how we will get better social outcomes, how we will be more agile in what is a turbulent and always changing global world around us. New South Wales has strengths in a range of R&D fields, but what I've discovered is that there are only pockets, and I mean only pockets, of excellence in translating research and commercialisation. So what we need to do is we need to make better use of the New South Wales Government's R&D activity, how we use our own R&D, how we partner with universities and industry, and how we procure solutions to our problems. We need to create the right environment in New South Wales for R&D and commercialisation activities to thrive. We need to address some of the critical challenges facing New South Wales by harnessing that extraordinary brain power and creativity that we have in our state. Now, the government doesn't have all the answers, so our work is guided by an advisory council, which the Premier and I appointed, and it's made up of a diverse group of leaders, and it's chaired by David Gonski, AC. We also want your ideas, which is why I'm here tonight, of course, on how we can accelerate research and development so we can continue to invest in the future of New South Wales. But first I wanted to dwell on what R&D actually is. So if you look at the OECD definition, R&D is the creative and systematic work undertaken in order to increase the stock of knowledge. It includes knowledge of humankind, culture and society, and new applications of that available knowledge. R&D is often referred to as research and experimental development because the activities are creative, they're novel, they're uncertain, in addition to being systematic, transferable, and or reproducible. The key important outcome of R&D for our community is progress. It's better health treatments, it's safer transport, it's water or energy sustainability solutions, just to name a few. And it will help us respond to the changing world that we see beyond this room and take advantage of the many opportunities that we know that arise. R&D from New South Wales already has had global impact. I don't know whether you're aware of this, but I was surprised when I looked into this. For example, did you know that the core technology that made wireless LAN fast and reliable, the ubiquitous Wi-Fi, was actually developed by CSIRO? And that John O'Sullivan, the electrical engineer who pioneered that work in radio astronomy, studied at Sydney University. Other examples, the electronic pacemaker was invented in Sydney by Dr. Mark Lidwell and physicist Edgar Booth, and it was used as early as 1928. The platform for Google Maps, developed in Sydney by Danish brothers Lars and Jens Rasmussen in the early 2000s, was developed here, of course, and later sold to Google. The homegrown IT giant Atlassian, which is set to become an anchor tenant at Sydney's Innovation and Technological Precinct at Central Eveleigh, of course, is homegrown and is creating highly skilled jobs right here in Sydney. Of course, there's the solar photovoltaics under UNSW Scientia Professor Martin Green, who a number of you will know, and he received the prestigious Global Energy Prize in 2018. And I must mention, of course, our New South Wales' very own chief scientist, engineer Professor Hugh Durrant-White, who I'm sure is known to you. He leads the way in two evolving fields of research and development and translation of that in relation to autonomous vehicle navigation and sensor data fusion for mine and port automation. New South Wales has strengths in a range of R&D fields like quantum computing, robotics, in the material sciences and medical technology. We are excellent, I must say, in translating research when it comes to medical devices. And in fintech, and in supporting startups through our Sydney Startup Hub, not very far away from here on York Street. So I want to share with you a look at a pocket of translational excellence to understand why that might be, and it's in relation to medical devices. So since 2013, New South Wales Health's Medical Device Fund, I call it the MDF, has supported individuals and companies and private and public hospitals, medical research institutes and universities to take local innovation to the market. It has awarded more than $55 million in grants to 35 technologies, with the organisations raising more than $700 million, which isn't bad, and leading to the treatment of over 300,000 patients and 200 medical devices sold into global markets. Two examples of potentially life-changing projects are an affordable dialysis system and kits for scalable gene therapy, which I'm told are important for gene therapies which are going to cure forms of cancer. The MDF is complemented by the New South Wales Medical Device Commercialisation Training Program, which helps build people's capability to drive medical device commercialisation. And since 2014, the program's graduates have established their own companies, engaged industry partners, and raised more than $9 million in grants and private investment. So as a start, reflecting on that, one of the things that the New South Wales government must do is better support research translation by applying New South Wales Health's successful approach on medical devices to other areas of our government. The New South Wales Innovation and Productivity Council has been examining university collaboration with small and medium enterprises to identify ways in which collaboration can be enhanced, both to improve the translation of university R&D and the use of universities' research capacity for SMEs. The IPC, during its work, found that businesses' ability to collaborate is one of the biggest factors in determining its global competitiveness. And the IPC also found that despite Australia and New South Wales being top OECD producers of high-value research and talent, currently less than 5% of Australian businesses collaborate in joint R&D projects with an Australian research organisation. Now, that is a sobering fact, but with the glass half full, it reveals an enormous opportunity for us as a state. It just doesn't make sense to me for New South Wales to be lagging in translating research and commercialisation, because frankly, we have so much going for us as a state. We are the largest state in the nation. We are the best performing state economy. We have Sydney, you know, Sydney being the only true global city. We have a highly skilled and educated workforce. We have universities ranked inside top institutions globally. And so I ask, why is this the case? Well, I've come to the conclusion it's a bit like a Rubik's Cube. There are so many dimensions to why this might be the case. But the task I've set, and the Premier is asking me to grapple with, it's a Rubik's Cube that we are determined to solve. I wanted to touch on Australia as a nation and where it also sits in relation to R&D. And I think it's fair to say we're good, but we're not great in translating R&D. We are ranking in the top 25 countries for both the Global Competitiveness Report and the Global Innovation Index, and that's been for the last 5 years, which is commendable. That Global Innovation Index is an annual report produced by Cornell University, INSEAD, and the World Intellectual Property Organisation. In the 2018 Global Innovation Index, Australia was ranked 20 overall, 11 for innovation inputs, and 31 for innovation outputs. Now, to give you an idea about what those inputs and outputs are, the inputs measured include the quality of education we have, the investment we make into R&D, the sophistication of our markets, the nature and stability of our political and regulatory environment, and the outputs include the creation of knowledge and its impact on the community and beyond. In this year's index, Australia ranked 22, so up from 20, 15 for innovation inputs and 31 for innovation outputs. So our overall ranking and input ranking has slipped in that year, including our score on R&D investment. In addition, our conversion of innovation inputs into innovation outputs is weak, and it's consistently trailing the inputs. To its credit, the Australian government stepped up its innovation and R&D agenda in 2015, where it brought its many separate but related policies together under the $1 billion National Innovation and Science Agenda, the NISA. It established a new strategic body, Innovation and Science Australia, and it was charged with informing policy on innovation, science and research, overseeing innovation programs, and championing Australia's innovation, science and research system. And there are some very important initiatives that have flowed from that work. I mentioned two. There's the $500 million Biomedical Translational Fund, which provides companies with venture capital to develop and commercialise biomedical discoveries. And then there's the CSIRO's $200 million Main Sequence Ventures Fund, which supports the commercialisation of early stage innovations that are developed exclusively at publicly funded institutions. In 2017, Innovation and Science Australia published their Australia 2030 Prosperity Through Innovation Plan. It made 30 recommendations underpinning five policy imperatives, and they were education, industry, government, culture and ambition, and R&D. And it did make the point that R&D effectiveness would be improved by increasing the translation and commercialisation of research. However, I think it's fair to say that the intensity of the federal government's focus on R&D has waned. The science, research and innovation budget tables report the government's annual investment in R&D and science and innovation. The 2019 release shows that the investment in R&D peaked in 2011-12 and has since declined, with a small jump in financial year 2017-18. Australia's total spend on R&D, so that's the R&D expenditure by businesses, government, higher education and the private not-for-profit sector, was 1.79% of GDP in financial year 17-18, down from 2.11% 6 years ago and below the OECD average of 2.37% in 2017. Meanwhile, in that same year, Japan and Sweden committed more than 3% of GDP on R&D, and Korea and Israel more than 4%. And despite the announcements on a new space agency, a space industry development strategy, defence innovation, advanced manufacturing, and strategies around small business during the federal election this year, my view is the national momentum has seemed to have slowed. Amongst other things, which has been widely reported, the Research and Development Tax Incentive Scheme was trimmed in the last two federal budgets. There are arguments about whether that's the best tool or one of the best tools to engender R&D and commercialisation. But I think the point of where the national agenda is at makes it even more important for New South Wales to accelerate our R&D efforts. R&D is a complex activity. It has a large number of stakeholders. And so in our work, we're grappling with a number of questions. And I'll list some of them. We don't have the answers, I might add, but that's the work ahead of us. So how is it that we would encourage research in the right areas and of the right quality? How will the government support the translation of research into economic and social outcomes? How do we make that translation possible, both for small companies and for big businesses? How do we attract and then retain the best and brightest PhD candidates and researchers, and indeed those with a vocational skill set, which are equally important? How do we create the right environment for commercialisation to occur, whether it's a startup company or a company that's aged and mature but looking to reinvent itself? How do we create the right tax and regulatory environment? how do we use procurement, which is an important tool of a state government, to drive the R&D agenda? And how do we galvanise the key stakeholders together to accelerate their collective creative and problem-solving talents? And I think across that complex spectrum, the key question for us as a government is, when do we as a government need to be an enabler? When are we a facilitator? When are we an active partner? And frankly, when do we need just to get out of the way? And it's in this context that I wanted to share with you some of what I've heard from stakeholders and from the Advisory Council. We've met twice, the last time last Friday. And there are four key themes that I have been able to discern in what's been offered up over this period of consultation. The first one is government action. I've touched on that. What is the role of government as a player or participant in the R&D ecosystem? The second one is attraction. How do we attract the best talent and investment, meaning business investment, to New South Wales and other investments? The third theme is collaboration. You know, that means galvanising a critical mass for growth that's self-perpetuating. And it's really about reinforcing what I'd call a magic that comes from bringing people together and places in a way to collaborate beyond your imagination, beyond the physical structures and the formal organisational programs that you have. And the fourth theme is translation. You know, how are we going to better support our startups to scale up and commercialise their research? I'm going to now expand on those four themes, and I want to get your insights when we turn to Q&A and also through our public consultation process, which is online, to see what else we should be considering. So the first theme is government action. Now, just this year, and it might surprise you, for the first time, we have done an audit of the New South Wales government's expenditure on R&D. I found that quite surprising. We had not done that before. We found out, you know, give or take, that we spend about $400 million on research and development and enabling activities during financial year 2018-19. There was about $130 million on research enabling activities, so that's not pure R&D, that's things like capital investment, admin that might underpin research programs, and $250 million on direct research, so that's commissioned research and the grants that we roll out to participants in the ecosystem. Unfortunately, I've discovered there is no central coordination of those efforts, and evaluation of the outcomes that are achieved is very ad hoc across our government. That is clearly something we need to change. We need to also be more strategic to ensure that what we invest, we get a return on, and to learn from what success looks like, and then to take that and apply that. Government procurement can be a strategic driver of R&D and of innovation. Each year, our government spends over $30 billion on goods and services. We are a market maker for many products. Now, one suggestion is to make sure that we embed a culture in government of supporting and not disadvantaging local startups in our procurement processes. A small business with a yet unproven innovative solution will likely struggle to succeed in a government tender against a proven solution. That proven solution, of course, would be based on old technology. So we need to level the playing field, not just to support small businesses and startups, but to ensure that we all benefit from what I've seen as extraordinary creativity across our community in New South Wales. I've heard a lot about the difficulty of navigating the New South Wales government and that there's no visible front door, so people can readily identify how to work with us on R&D activities and translation. Many stakeholders have highlighted the significant benefits of government strategically coordinating universities, government, industry, on R&D activities. And I think we could do a better job of actually leveraging our bids together with universities and industry toward federal government funding opportunities. Another idea, which is used in other parts of the world, is to capture some of the commercial benefit from successfully translated R&D and actually reinvest that back through the government into R&D, other R&D projects. can also better support R&D and its translation through those levers we have as a state government: land use planning for placemaking, tax policies, regulatory settings, and investments in our human and physical capital. Big data, or data, and its analytics really is the most significant resource that we've discovered this century, and it just keeps popping up in all of my consultations. The New South Wales Government collects and curates substantial data, which has the potential to help us make better informed and targeted and strategic decisions. And more of this data should be made available so innovative products and services can be developed. We do some of that already, but we could do that much more extensively across government. An example of our government using data to help make us help us make better decisions is a digital twin, believe it or not, developed by a Department of Customer Services Spatial Services by my colleague Victor Dominello and CSIRO's Data 61. I don't know if any of you have had a chance to see this, but I went out to Data 61 to see it. So it's basically a digital twin of our city, and it replicates it on screen. It's an interactive digital replication of a real model of our city, and it enables us to see what's there under the ground, whether it's sewage works, whether it's power lines, whether it's the way the transport works, whether it's shadowing, you name it, you will be able to see it in this model. And of course that'll mean we can do better planning and transport decisions and design decisions across our state. An example which we started under a former Premier was the Innovation Initiative. It saw government crowdsourcing ideas to solve key challenges using our data. And one success is something that we all benefit from each day, which is the partnership between the New South Wales Government, and again, Data 61, to compile data from the Opal cards, from GPS devices, traffic signals and buses, to alert road users to impending congestion on the roads, and to offer up alternative transport routes. What a fantastic application of big data. Turning to the second theme, which is about attraction, I have heard from stakeholders about how they view it important for attracting the best talent and investment from big and small and multinational companies right here in New South Wales. So it's not just about those companies having a shop front in New South Wales, which is a simple thing to do, or relatively simple, but it's actually for them to invest by doing their R&D activities here, drawing on the talent that is here in New South Wales and creating jobs to remain right here. The third theme is collaboration. So putting industries and research organisations in the same physical space or connecting them up has proven effective in driving collaboration, innovation and the commercialisation of ideas across the globe. There are many examples of it. The shared facilities, the equipment, a shared sense of identity, formal and informal exchanges of ideas, networks, partnerships can all create an ecosystem that produces what economists call knowledge spillover. They help people develop their skills through the co-location of universities and research institutes and in collaboration with industry and startups that can include student internships, collaborative research projects, and I could go on. And this in turn attracts domestic and international talent and industry investment and optimises the use of our buildings and our land. So it's why the New South Wales Government established innovation precincts to support that kind of ecosystem approach. But I've also heard from stakeholders that we have too many precincts in New South Wales. They're on varying scale, they're sometimes of dubious rationale, I'll leave that to other people's judgments, and that we need to get better focused to get the most out of them. And that work is currently underway. Coordination between the New South Wales Government, industries and universities is also critical. And we have a new thing which you might have heard of called the New South Wales Waratah Research Network. It's headed by our Chief Scientist and Engineer, Darrant White. And for the first time, we've actually linked up all of our key R&D people and activities across government. That is such a welcome initiative. And through that network, we are working on ways to support collaboration on R&D and the translation of research with universities and industry. And what about when we support R&D, making sure our focus is on areas where New South Wales has a comparative advantage? So all of those things that I've raised are really obvious and smart things that we must do as a state. The final and fourth thing, translation, I want to touch on as well. Did you know that Sydney is the startup capital of Australia? We have nearly half of the nation's startup businesses calling Sydney home. And New South Wales is way ahead of Queensland at 20% and Victoria at 13%. I've been a regular visitor to the Sydney Startup Hub in Sydney's CBD. I encourage you to go there and have a look on York Street. And I've seen firsthand the great outcomes from supporting what are principally their tech startups to scale commercialisation and to grow. It was a $35 million investment in the Startup Hub that was made. It was the first of its kind in Australia. And since opening in February 2018, it has attracted leading co-working communities, including Fishburners, Tankstream Labs, the creative incubator The Studio, Australia's largest fintech hub, Stone and Chalk. And larger corporate tenants have also cited themselves there, like Microsoft, Optus, Caltex, and they've established business accelerators in that 11-storey building on York Street. Out of that, some really good things have already happened. Stone and Chalk's residents and alumni have raised more than $100 million in their first year at the Startup Hub. Fishburners have tripled its size from 200 to 600 members, attracting $40 million in investment and another $65 million in sales. Tankstream Labs also reports it's doubled its numbers of startups to 85. And Australia's first media technology incubator, The Studio, has attracted 40 startups and over $25 million investment since opening this March. So one of the things we need to do out of that experience is to work out if we could take that as an approach and apply it to other kinds of startups that aren't so based on technological desk-based innovation. So ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to go back to where I started tonight. Our vision is to make New South Wales the R&D leader within Australia and a world-class contributor. The initiative that I'm leading on behalf of our government is not going to, I can confirm, result in another report sitting on a shelf gathering dust. There are plenty of those already. And we also are being nimble and strategic. As I would put it, although it's not original thought, you know, we don't want to boil the ocean. Right? We want to do things purposefully, meaningfully, and do what we can. What we want to do is, with the action plan that we'll develop, we want to use our better way of doing R&D to solve a big public policy challenge. We want to road test the plan against a real outcome. A challenge that politics and business and universities alone can't seem to solve. And here are some possible challenges. An ageing, growing, urbanising population, which puts pressure on our infrastructure and our budget, including our healthcare system. Our rapidly changing technology, automation, artificial intelligence and big data, and how it's going to change the nature of our work. The increasing pressure on our scarce natural resources like water. These are all challenges that our government can't afford to ignore. And a better way of doing R&D provides a big opportunity for us to tackle one of those. So finally, to recap my key messages tonight. R&D investment counts. It matters because it powers innovation and it can help us build a strong future for our state. Whether it's economic outcomes, it's social outcomes, we need to be able to respond smartly to a changing world, and R&D can help us do that. New South Wales has a range of strengths in R&D fields, but only pockets of excellence in how we've translated that research. So what do we need to do? We need to make better use of the government's R&D activity ourselves. We need to create a better environment in New South Wales for R&D and commercialisation to thrive. And we need to address some of the critical challenges facing New South Wales by harnessing what we all know is extraordinary brain power and creativity to solve those challenges. Many questions and issues have been raised during our consultations, and there's a lot of work to do. And I do want to commend my team in the Department of Premier and Cabinet who are here supporting me tonight, Josie Khalil and Ben Gales, who are sitting right up there, not heckling me, which is very nice. But they are an enormous resource inside of government. And I did also want to single out Stephen Edwards, who's our chief economist sitting there, who released the economic blueprint with the Treasury just last week. But we want to hear from you. We want to hear from everybody across the R&D ecosystem on how we can accelerate R&D so that we can continue to invest in New South Wales' future in the way that we have on hard infrastructure. I want you to share your views with me tonight. We particularly want to catalogue what you say in terms of our open submissions, which are open till the 13th of December. We have a website that's embedded in the Department of Premier and Cabinet, so we have a link that you can go on. But please make sure, doesn't matter how short or long it is, that you get that in before the 13th of December. And I would simply say that, you know, we have an uncertain world, but two things are certain. And that is that we as the government don't have all the answers to this inside our government. But we definitely want your help. Thank you, Gerard. I'll leave my comments there.
Many thanks to the Minister for an important address tonight. So we come to questions and discussion. If I can get our speaker, you can come back here. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got to be pretty brief tonight. They can put in long submissions. We've got to put in short comments.
Okay.
So a bit like this. In this room tonight, virtually everyone, perhaps everyone, would support your view and your electorate, probably as well in eastern suburbs of Sydney. But Malcolm Turnbull found in the 2016 election that when he ran very hard on the concept of innovation, in certain parts of Australia, a lot of Australians thought innovations means I'll lose my job or I might lose my job. So how does a politician sell this sort of message across the whole of the electorate, not just to individual bits of the electorate?
So a very good question. The way the New South Wales government would describe what innovation R&D actually gives to our community across New South Wales is, you know, new jobs, jobs that don't exist, new products, new services, and I touched on some of them in my speech, you know, cures for diseases that we don't have at the moment, better ways of getting to work, better ways of being able to make sure that your kids are taken care for in quality health facilities and kindergartens. So I think it's the way in which you explain what that means in day-to-day terms, that it really is very real, that it can improve the quality of our lives, it can mean we live longer and we're cared for better in our hospitals, and that not everybody necessarily will want to have a job in relation to these new areas, but those who do can actually make a better place for all of us to live. It's what we call progress. We've been doing progress for a long time, Western civilization, and this is the next step.
Just stay there.
Thank you.
The door's there, but you're going to stay here.
Hello. Enjoyed the talk. I'm very happy I came to listen to this. You know, my background is I'm a search and scientist, which in itself is an oxymoron. But I have two questions pertaining to the audit that you conducted, where you found that $400 million was spent. And then one comment, which if you could elaborate on. So the question in terms of the audit is, do we know geographically of that $400 million? Mm-hmm. How much was spent, how far away from Macquarie Street, you know, and how much made it south of the Cook River, in terms of the geographical distribution? That is one.
Again, don't be brief, okay?
And the second question in terms of the audit was, in terms of like the example that MDF you gave, we always hear the positive things, you know, $40 million spent, so much come out. But do we know in that audit what happened to those applications that were rejected? What happened to those companies?
Okay.
Did they die?
So some very good questions. So on the first one, do we know geographically where it was spent? No, I don't have that level of detail, but that's something that we do know, obviously. But remember, we're coming off a low base here. It's the first time we've actually been able to aggregate this, and it's taken a number of months to get there. And as to your second question about, you know, we really do need to understand, you know, why some companies and why some investments and why some research produces commercialised translational outcomes. We don't really do that systematic analysis of our research and development across the state, and that's something the state really needs to do. Because if you don't know if what you're investing is doing good things, exactly how it can be used to support future projects. And equally, you want to understand, you know, if the money hasn't gone to certain companies, probably, you know, had they been able to attract and been successful outside a government funding program.
What have been the failures, that is?
Absolutely.
Right, there's a question here.
Thanks, Bob Graham. Mm-hmm. I get up at Biomedical Research Institute years ago.
You've got to speak up a bit.
Cardiovascular problems, but you mentioned that the federal government has decreased its spending over the last few years, and I think that's absolutely true. But more than that, we've got a real problem at the moment. We've got a National Health and Medical Research Council that's giving out funds in a very constrained way. We really have never seen funding so low in terms of success rates. The MRFF, I think most people would agree, is a mess. It's been given out willy-nilly with no real objective way of evaluating how the work's going. So we really depended very heavily on the state, and I would applaud the state for what they've done so far, and say that the onus is on the state to really step up now if we're going to help the biomedical community. That this disconnect we have in this state, unfortunately, is you have a lot of R&D, you have a lot of pharmaceutical companies, but most of them are at the D side, at the marketing side, with very little primary research being done here. We've got to try and attract some more interaction with the pharmaceutical companies, etc., at the research side, so they can interact more with academia, and that's why there's not much collaboration
okay.
going on.
Okay.
I agree. I'll leave my comment there. Absolutely.
There's a question here.
Just put it to your mouth.
So, Tony Cunningham, representing AMRI Westmead and my institute. When you compare us with Melbourne, two big lumps of medical research, that around the University of Melbourne, Parkville Precinct, and at Monash, many people make the comment that we have tyranny of geography here, and I guess one of the things I want to ask is how is the government and help us as precincts and the universities link places like Randwick, Darlinghurst, Otomo, Westmead, the big lumps of research which are so spread.
So that connectivity beyond the physical space, yeah, I think that's a job of all the collaborators. Because some of the universities would be common to some of those medical research precincts as well. I mean, Melbourne has such a critical mass in Parkville that they've built up over time, and they've been pretty strategic and clever around how they've done that. So I think there is a job of government. I think that's kind of a facilitator. I mean, we're the party that should be able to bring the precincts together where they make sense, even if they're not in the same spot. So we do have a role. But I think if you're given the right incentives by us to do that, you're going to reach out to another medical precinct, say POW, even if you're sitting in Westmead, which is a great centre. So we have to get more strategic in how we support you and what you do.
Next question here.
Tim Regan, sorry for the George Institute. You mentioned about the Sydney Innovation above Central Station. Is this sort of go hand in hand with that? A lot of this funding might be something that might be a home for that. I suppose to make it really successful, it would be great if it's not just commercial organisations paying the lease, but there are some government initiatives that really do manage to retrieve information.
I'll take that as a comment. So the tech precinct is something that is still in formation. We've got some anchor partners.
But first, I mean, because a lot of people watching on television, listening on the podcast, won't know about this. So what this in York Street, Sydney, this hub is what? Built by who? Private entities?
We're actually talking about the tech precinct, which is not yet formed. Yeah.
Okay, well, tell us about the other one as well, because...
So the startup hub is... Yeah. People are familiar with that on York Street. If you don't know where it is, you go and have a look.
But a lot of people listening tonight who are not in the room, so you've got to tell them. Okay.
So I mentioned it before. It's on York Street. It's just near William Station across the road. And so I was talking about fish burners and...
So who built it? The government or private?
The government funded it.
Okay.
And has some anchor tenants that are not only government departments and some of the corporates. I mentioned Caltex, for example, but it really has become a place where businesses, individuals, have a place to come and co-work and share their ideas. But it's principally focused around desk technology or desk science. It's not doing the deep tech science that you might go in a lab, for example. That is not the nature of innovation at the startup hub. But again, that's down at York Street, and I did talk about that in my
speech. And the one you're talking about is not yet underway, but what if it were underway, what would it be?
Well, it was announced. It was announced in February, just before the election. And so the key anchor tenant there is Atlassian, so they will move their premises there. And the challenge and the opportunity there is to bring not only business, but the universities in there. So there'll be, in the way that our innovation precincts work, there's usually a university partner, there's usually businesses that come in. There are, you want probably a vocational training element to that as well. And that's where the imprecise science about all of this is, to get that right number of people who are in the same space and then encourage them by design to share ideas with one another as a government is really, you know, the creative part of it. That we seem to get right in some spots where it makes sense and we struggle in others.
So Alessian's good in this one, but what's the role of the New South Wales government if it gets off the ground? What's the role?
So we convene this precinct, we put money into it, and obviously brokering some of the deals that lead to Atlassian being the anchor tenant. Some of the, I believe, at least one of the tenants in Sarapa will go down there. I think it's Fishburners will go down there and also be an anchor tenant. But it's something that will take some real estate acquisition, some building of new buildings, again, to design what is an innovation precinct that makes sure we get the collaboration between all those partners that are in there.
There's a question here, behind you.
Congratulations, Richard Alcock, Chairman of Western Sydney Local Health District. Congratulations on a fantastic address tonight, Gabriel.
Thank you, Richard.
In public capital markets, the reporting of environmental, social and governance initiatives by individual organisations has seen a quantum lift in investment and in focus on ESG issues in public capital markets. And I wonder, is there scope for the government to ask organisations, both public and private, for-profit and not-for-profit, doing business or beneficiaries of the government, to report on our R&D initiatives? The government also has made very significant progress in promoting Indigenous employment, as making that a criteria for the award of contracts. So across all the different arms of government, I wonder, is there an opportunity to include investment in R&D and translation of research as one of the criteria against which you would ask us to report?
I think that's a really good idea. You know, when it comes to publicly listed companies, obviously we don't have the laws that enable us to embed that. In procurement, I was talking about we could embed innovation and new ideas and not disadvantage companies that might bring a new innovative solution, because clearly they're not going to be the tried and tested way of doing things, but government should be, with the patient capital and the timeframes and the fact that we are there for the custodians of the community, should be able to be a little bit more patient with making sure we support those innovative ideas. I mean, it may be that, you know, something as simple or complex that when we do pieces of work in government and we have a more connected up approach across government, which is framed, I think, best by what our Premier says is, you know, let's just get it done, implementation, is when we have projects in government, asking the question of, does this boost research and innovation in the state? And if it doesn't, if the question's asked, it actually makes it mindful for people who are putting funding submissions together, for cabinet minutes that go up, in the way that we ask other questions when cabinet minutes go up. Maybe you should ask the question, you know, is this supporting research and development innovation? And create as a part of our decision making in government.
Question out of the back.
I'm Captain from the Minister of Europe, it's in the periphery of Sydney, and I had to fight for the microphone sitting in the periphery of here. So it's still from where I am. Thank you for such a great speech, Minister, for this very important initiative. As you mentioned, there are a lot of talent in Australia and in New South Wales, and the talented researchers, but they don't go into innovation. And there's a very big jump from academic research to innovation, and any researcher who's going to innovation are risking their career. They're jeopardizing their career by slowing down their publications. And what's the incentive for the research plan from the government. He also put two figures of total expenditure on goods and services and R&D expenditure, and I didn't see what mess I can do with it. The government expenditure is less than 1% for R&D, and that's...
Okay, we've got to be...
That's way below the work practice. And do you plan to increase the budget for increased expenditure for the R&D in this state?
So in New South Wales?
The suggestion was if you go from research to innovation, you lose out academically because you're not doing your research work, and then are you going to give them any more money for research? I think they're the two questions briefly stated, yeah.
Well, I disagree with the first statement. I mean, you know, what we're not doing well is we've got great research, but we're not kind of getting it over the fortress to translate into products and services and connect with businesses and with government. And on the second one, I think the first thing you want to do is you want to understand whether our $400 million that we do spend, a greater proportion of that actually is in R&D, whether that's actually getting us results and benefits. So, you know, before you spend more, you want to understand what you're getting out of what you're expending. We know that the medical devices fund has done really, really well, but again, that's very narrow and targeted. And I gave you the data around that. It actually has been incredibly successful, and that was set up under a former health minister.
Thank you, that's terrific. I'm Matthew Vardis from the Centenary Institute, also a medical researcher. And I, like some of my colleagues, adjudicate a lot of innovation and ideas grants. And anti-intuitively, I think innovation is an apprenticeship. I keep on finding the successful people come from small hubs where they've got wonderful peers that engender the idea of creativity and innovation. Thus, in a sense, the corollary of that is it's really important to invest in great people and great hubs that can be a sort of a generator of innovation around the set. I guess the question is, do you have a plan for recruiting the best into New South Wales?
The best in terms of PhDs and skill migration?
No. The best in terms of people that run the Broad Institute or the Crick Institute or can gather groups of 100 people around them, each of them successful.
So talent and human capital is the most important thing you have, really. You know, part of that is what this government will shortly announce around a trade and attraction investment strategy. So I've got to say, since we took government in March of this year, we've had some really good pieces of high strategic work, which are things you'll implement as well, that kind of set the tone for what we're doing. And one piece, as I mentioned before, was the economic blueprint that was released last week. We also have a piece of work that will shortly be announced that will talk to the attraction for inward-bound investment and what we're going to export. So draw some kind of... think about what it is that we want to do and how we do it, which will include attracting businesses but also talent here. And then when you come to R&D and innovation, we need to understand what R&D we have, we do better in terms of translational research. We do have some, as I said, some bright spots. There aren't many. But we're even doing a piece of work now that looks at, well, where are our research strengths and how do you measure them? Do you look at the number of CRCs that are based in New South Wales? Do you look at the Centres of Excellence? Do you look at, for example, the ERA and you work out? So this is all original work, which I suppose has surprised me, that it's not as simple as saying, you know, we are good at this, this and this, and here's the underlying analysis. We actually have to do that work. So if we work out what research strengths we have, you can then channel that through your trade strategy and your investment attraction strategy, not only for companies, but also for people like yourself who might want to come from other countries, because I know we're strong in these areas of research and there will be jobs and opportunities that relate to that because we know what we want to do. We know what we do well and we want to do more of it.
Final question.
Gabriel, listening to this, it sounds to me like we're trying to invent the wheel when we've already got a lot of the wheels here. Going on from that last question, and having been in Rotary for a few years, I mean, there are endless numbers of research institutes in Sydney and New South Wales, and they're always short of money. And they run around and they try to raise money, and nobody helps them. So what are we doing trying to invent innovation when we've got it out there with people who are actually giving their whole lives and careers to putting these institutes out and trying to develop them and whatever, why doesn't the government do an inventory of all the research institutes that are out there and start to support them, because they are the framework of what you're trying to do?
Okay.
And I think at the Garvin Institute down in Melbourne and some of those other big institutes in Melbourne, they didn't start off with the government telling people to go out and be innovative. They started from a grassroots up around universities, medical faculties and whatever. They're huge.
Okay.
And that's what I think we should be doing.
We do have a lot of medical research institutes. We have a number here present in the room tonight. And there's always the challenge of, you know, branding and identity and the particular kind of research that they do. We're not going to tell research institutes what to do. What we can do is channel our research funding and our programs and state more clearly where the focus of research would be, capitalising our strengths. That's how the government can lead, rather than telling anybody else what to do.
We've got to... We can take one of those who hasn't had said anything, and then we're going, because we're finished. It's right on the time, so got to be brief. Yep.
Very brief. A very important point we made was that we're sliding down the slippery slope of all the R&D around the world. We're not number 20, we were 15, 4 or 5 years ago, and that's just not acceptable. And my question is, to what extent are you looking at South Korea, for example, which has been one year in, year out? They do things at one end by embedding science in a community. We don't do that. At the other end, they've got a more vertical integration. Why aren't we doing that? It's not about just pouring more money, because it's just going to go the same sad way. And I've watched this for 35 years.
I agree with what you've said, and that is the work that we are doing through this initiative. You know, we should be better organised and strategic about what we're doing and how we're doing it, and look at other lessons. There are examples around the world. You know, to what extent are those countries that rank very high in innovation doing it by virtue of necessity, whether it's geography, opportunity? You know, why is it that we have great universities? All the things that I said that should lead to good outputs, should lead to good translational research and good innovation. Why is it we don't do as well when we've got the great inputs? It is a Rubik's Cube, because there are many things in between that explain why that's the case. Good inputs, not great outputs. But the state, I think, is in a really good position, because they're actually focusing and asking the tough questions.
Just a final quick question and a quick response. Submissions, you were talking earlier on about what you're doing next, so people are putting submissions into you. What happens? How do we go over the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months?
So submissions close on the 13th of December. We've got some media release that the Premier and I made about 4 weeks ago about what we're doing, which we can hand out so you know the link. So we'll look forward to your submissions. And we've had two advisory council meetings so far. We met last Friday. My promise to the Premier is by mid-next year. There are two bits to this. One is to look at the themes, which represent where we need to do some work, and to actually put a plan together, which is very practical, that says, you know, around translation, these are the things that we can do. Around attracting business, these are the things that we can do. So that's the good, hard, solid work that one needs to do for an action plan. But as I said, once we've got that settled, we will then use that model to apply it to a big challenge, because we think this is the real way to demonstrate that that plan of action is going to work. And what's more, I'm optimistic we'll deliver a better outcome for one of those big problems that we faced. And we talked about the health system. We talked about sustainability around water. We talked about the changing nature of work. They're all things that research and development, the translation of, can help us deal with, and we need to recognise that.
Many thanks.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.